Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Tabletop Inquisition podcast. It's Oliver speaking at the moment. I've got with me the lovely Antoinette. Hello Antoinette, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm good, thanks Oliver. How are you doing for another exciting podcast episode? I've been waiting for this all month. It feels like forever since we did the last one.
It does, yes. And this one is a bit delayed, but there we go. Things happen. You know, we try and get these out regularly, but you know, life happens and so things. So anyway, let's not talk about those things. Let's talk about board games and fun and all those other things. And I think normally we start with talking about things we've been up to recently. So is there anything that maybe you want to share with everyone since last month? Have you done any exciting things or any projects?
I'm surviving. That's what I'm calling these couple of months. Obviously, I've put out some videos. I got to play some new stuff on Feld Games this month, which is always exciting. And I made my first review where I felt like I was a bit snarky. And I wasn't sure whether I was going to post it or not. And my husband egged me on to post it. And it's got a lot of nice comments and people getting back to me about it. So maybe I should be more snarky in the future. I don't know. I don't think it benefits anybody to be mean about something. You know the kind of way? I'm just not a mean person. But you know the way when something doesn't turn out the way you expect it to? And you're like, this isn't great. But you want to say it in a nice way. That kind of thing. So I'm learning the art of being subtle and good with words this month in that kind of sense. So yeah, that's been the most exciting thing that happened to me. I tried to do something a little bit outside of my comfort zone.
I think you're always very good there. You know, you very good at finding always the positive in the game. So I think even with a worst game, if you were ever asked to, whatever that means, worst game, but you know, if you ever asked to review that, you would probably always find something positive. So I think it's fine if you do say something, if you're constructive about it. I think that's we said that before, probably, that it's about being constructive. You know, it's no good just saying, oh, it's all wonderful, and not mentioning anything that you didn't get on with. But at the same time, you might say, look, it's just not for me. It might be for someone else and things like that.
Yeah, so exactly.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, there's just that line, isn't it? Yeah, there's just that line, isn't there, where you're like, I'm not purposefully trying to be mean, but this is how things are.
Yeah.
And it sounds like I'm being a bit mean, and I'm not used to having to be kind of so far on one side. Yeah. So, I still think it's a balanced review. I think I was a little snippy for once. And people were entertained by the notion of being me being snippy. So, I was like, fair enough. So that, yeah, that's my exciting thing in the month. I got a little bit mean. Yeah, so what have you been doing, Oliver? I bet you're more busy than I am.
I don't know. I've actually had probably quite a month busy at work, as I said before. It's just, you know, trying to carry on with the blog, putting my articles and reviews out. But I don't think there were any particular big highlights or anything like that.
Okay.
Just carrying on and trying to get ahead of the time now. Got a week off now at the end of October.
Woo-hoo!
So I need to get ahead of all the articles and get them ready and lined up. So that took most of my time. I think that was the biggest thing. But no, nothing major. It was just average months so far anyway.
Are you going to do anything nice for Halloween? A very important question.
Well, I'm the sort of person who we decorate the front garden with ghouls and goblins and skeletons and lighting. And I even got like sound effects playing and things like that. So there's a bit of a soundtrack of, you know, wolves howling and clock towers chiming and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we used to do it obviously a lot with kids coming in, and we'd hand out sweets, and we were quite popular. It was nice. The kids and the grown-ups or the parents were saying, oh, I really love your front garden, you know, best one and all that. And that was all very, very exciting. And this year is obviously going to be different. So we'll see how it goes. We're still going to decorate, but I don't think we'll be able to allow kids to come in, unfortunately, because of the situation.
Yeah.
But at least still give them something to look at and enjoy. I think that's the least we can do. That's going to be planned for my week off, basically, the week before Halloween. Just going to relax a bit. And then the Saturday, we're going to, as I say, decorate the front gardens. We only do it for one night, just on Halloween evening.
That's cool.
And then take it all down again. So, yeah.
Oh, I'm jealous.
That's planned for that time off.
That sounds fantastic.
I'll send some pictures out as we get to it.
That sounds fantastic. I wish I was the person who went more all in on Halloween. You know, that kind of way. Every year I wish I did more or enjoyed it a bit more, because I think it's just such a fun holiday.
Yeah.
And you know, it's interesting as well. People have been talking about what their favorite horror games are, or games maybe to play at Halloween. I've been thinking about this. I don't think I have a lot of very scary games, or, you know, games that are a little bit creepy. creepy that you might want to play with a candle out or the lights off, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was wondering, what are people's favorite Halloween games? What would you play at Halloween?
Well, that's the thing. I'm the same. I've been thinking before, should I, you know, schedule things for big events like, you know, Christmas games and Halloween games and what would you play for Easter and all that?
Yeah.
And I've never, ever thought about games like that. To me, they're, you know, I just play something throughout. I mean, there's probably some sort of zombie flux and things like that you can play.
True.
But I don't think I've actually got sort of any themes that are sort of holiday themed. Sorry, any games that are holiday themed in any way, I don't think. So I couldn't really think of any specific ones. But I'm sure there's like... Oh, actually, we've got Haunt the House. That's
there
probably quite... thematic. There you go. So.
There you go. Isn't Jaws a horror film?
It's quite hard, isn't it? Yeah, that's true, I suppose.
I don't know.
Is it Halloween? I don't know.
No, it's not Halloween. I suppose not Halloween. I think the only one I have is Nyctophobia, because it's a game you play in the dark, and it is supposed to be quite like suspenseful and creepy like that. But
of course,
you kind of need you need other humans, I think, to make these games really fun. The Halloween-y games, I think, or the, you know, there's like Fury of Dracula, you know, where you track somebody down, and you need a group to make a good Halloween game. That's my thinking behind it. Now, I could be wrong about that. I'd like to hear other people's suggestions, and not just games that have a Halloween theme tacked onto it. You want a game that kind of fits the whole vibe, don't you? You want one that just doesn't happen to be a Halloween game, but it's at its core, it's creepy.
Exactly, yeah. Well, yeah, let us know if you can think of anything.
Yeah, we'd love to know.
Send in your Halloween games. Mm-hmm. Obviously, by the time you've listened to this, Halloween is over, but maybe what have you been playing during Halloween?
What did you do on Halloween night?
Have you had games out?
Exactly.
Do share.
Yeah, I'd love to know more.
So speaking of games then, do you want to start with the games you've been playing recently? You mentioned Steffenfeld already, let us know. What games have you been playing recently?
Okay. So actually, I've played very few games this month because I've been kind of busy. You know, there's sometimes the way like life gets busy and then your hobby is also kind of your work. So that feels like it's also busy then trying to do things. So I was having a look through my phone just before we started to see what games I'd actually played in the last month. I think I've only played like 7, which is amazingly low for me, but I'm pretty sure I'll fix that at the weekend and stuff. But so I suppose, I should talk about the Steffenfeld titles. So the first one I played, and I won't go into it in too much detail, is The Castles of Tuscany, because I've made a review for it. Yeah. My very snarky review, if you want to go check that out. It's not The Castles of Burgundy. It's a bit less than that. And that's where I'll go with that. But the second one I think is a lot more promising and exciting. So I will talk about that. And this is Bonfire. Yeah. So it's from Pegasus Spiele, it's from Steffenfeld, and this is a game that has both art and theme, which is kind of impressive when you think about it.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful game. The story behind it is a little bit confusing. Do you ever see these games where they're trying to like connect all these various elements in a way that makes sense, but it doesn't really hang together all that great?
Yeah.
This seems to be a game about guardians of bonfires, and the guardians have gone away and you're trying to coax them back to relight the bonfires. And there's trolls somewhere in there.
Okay.
That's the theme.
Are there marshmallows in it as well?
No, sadly, there's not. But there's all sorts of kind of offerings to the gods and things like, well, to the guardians and things like that. But basically the game is like, there's so many parts to it. It's like there's 4 different things you can do and they're all connected together. So if you want to do some of it, you have to do some of the others. It does feel like a Steffenfeld like that, where instead of there being tracks to kind of keep track of everything, there's sections of the board that you progress along and you create these bonfires. Okay. I will say the components in it are stellar. It's been a while since I've opened up a kind of a Euro game where I thought the art was really lovely and all the components work really nicely together. Yeah. And it's got some really cool pieces because your player board is in like a half moon shape and you fill it with bonfires that click in as you go around and you put in other pieces and it's like, it's very like, how do I explain it? It's very unique, which is really cool. And and so far I've enjoyed gameplay. Like the first play was a bit tough. There's no getting around it. And even after the second play, we weren't sure we were playing it correctly. because it was just so hard. Some of it's just very difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we looked it up online yesterday and it was like, no, no, we've been playing it correctly. It is just that hard. And I kind of like it for that too. I like the game that doesn't necessarily give you everything in the first go, where you have to play it more to, you know, learn more. And so already I want to play it again. So I'm like, well, I'm going to do this now this time that I figured that out. So yeah, it's a bit of a hunk, all right, to sit down with. There's a lot going on there. But it's, I think it's good. I want to play more of it to see how satisfying it is to play it, because at the moment it's still at the stage where you got to figure out how everything works correctly, so then you can, you know, apply strategies and stuff. Right now it's still very much figuring out how all the pieces fit.
Right.
So yeah, so I have high hopes for this.
Okay.
I think this could be good, and it seems people seem to be enjoying it so far. So. And also, I think it's really good value for money. There's loads and loads of stuff in the box, which was a nice surprise as well.
Yeah.
So that's always a good feeling, isn't it? Because it's been a long time since I paid like full price for a game. I haven't bought a new game in forever. So this one was, it was nice to, it was nice to get loads of stuff in it. So yeah, so that's what I was
and
playing.
High quality stuff by the sound of it as well.
So I think
just, not just the cost of the quantity, but actually good components.
I think so too. Yeah, I think it's solid. Yeah, it's definitely that. So yeah, exciting stuff in my house.
Okay,
so what about you? What's been on your table?
Well, I've actually been playing some sort of maybe lighter games, let's call them.
Yay.
So the first game, if I may mention two, but I'll do one, then you can do your second.
That's okay, don't go away.
It's QE by Board Game Tables, which I've backed on Kickstarter as, I think it was a reprint of the original, because I missed the original. And I played QE at Aircon, which was good fun. I always wanted to play because I was quite interested in how it all works. And played at Aircon, I thought, well, I definitely have to get it now. And yeah, that is a blind bidding game with a difference. So the background is QE stands for quantitative easing. And the idea is that it's sort of set against the 2008 banking crisis, where governments started pumping money into the economy and things like that. So the idea is that you are a government, and at an auction, you basically buy companies. And you know, you can bid basically however much you want because you can print money, so there is no limit to the bids you can set. And really what it is it's not a roll and write, but it's a bid and write almost. So you are really collecting sets of different types, so each company you bid for really represents a industry type, a country, and then just a point value. And if it's the country that you represent, you get bonus points and you win the company. And then you can also collect sets of different industry types and things like that. So the clue, though, I think, is not just that sort of set collection element, but the bidding. Mm-hmm. And the idea is here, you think, well, if everyone can bid as high as they want, what is the problem? Well, the problem is at the end of the game, you tot up all the winning bids, and whoever has bid the most is out of the game. So you want to bid high, but not too high. And that's where I think the interesting part of it is. So there's always, during the game, an auctioneer that goes around the sort of table who bids, does a starting bid open, and then everyone else can decide whether they want a bid higher or, well, lower. You could technically as well. I mean, there's even a zero bid, which gives you a point, but you probably want a bid higher because you want to have the company, but no one else knows how high you bid. So everyone else's bids is secret. And then the auctioneer just chooses the highest bid, announces who bid the highest, but not how much. So you're never quite sure whether someone just went crazy and bid £1 million when, you know, the starting bid might have been 500, or whether they bid lower. And yeah, it's just, I don't know, I just like that part of it. It's sort of almost social deduction. And as I say, trying to work out how much has everyone bid potentially. Can you now do a higher bid because you haven't won anything so far? And yeah, very, very clever. I quite like it. But very straightforward. I probably didn't explain it very well, but the rules are really quite basic. It's that bidding part that is the clever thing about it. So, older game, QE, but finally got to the table, so really enjoyed that, and probably want to play it again quite soon.
Yay! That's one I've heard of. I've heard lots of good things about it. It's one I would love to try as well. It sounds really fun, and I think sometimes the simplest games are the best ones. You don't always need to add a bunch of stuff to make a good game and a good experience, right? Yeah. So that sounds fantastic.
That's right,
stuff. Very cool. Bidding games are always entertaining, especially with a group of people.
I was going to say. And it works really well with 3, 4, 5 people, so it's, you know, worth giving a go if you like that.
I like it.
And you can, I think it's one of those games that when you play it again and again with the same group, you work each other out and work, okay, this person probably bids more. And then obviously that person will double bluff and not actually bid as much. And, you know, as you play with the same people, everyone will sort of change how they play as well. So it's very, very interesting, very social.
Cool.
So about the next game, maybe, have you got another game you want to share with us?
I'll go one more. I could probably go another, but sure, it's always two, so I'll be sensible. So yeah, yeah. We got fortunate enough that we had a visitor to our house a week or two ago to play games. We're all in lockdown now, so there goes all our visitors. But we managed to sneak one in somehow between all of the different lockdown measures. And he's a friend of ours who's big into space and space games. So I thought it was time that I should pull out Zia, Legends of Adrift System, which is my big epic space game. Yeah, Twilight Imperium is obviously the big space opera, but I've never really been mega interested in it. I suppose just because, you know, how long it takes to play. It's kind of a big commitment game. So yeah. Zia is another kind of space game. It's very much open world. You can do what you want. You can go where you like. You can be different types of people. You can trade for goods. You can shoot each other up. You can upgrade your ships. It's a bit of everything like that. And I find it really laid back, but really, really fun. And it's really, really clever, I think, as well. I love how the board interacts with the players. So, you know, you'll go to a particular place and a certain thing will happen and you'll read it from a card and you'll get to make choices about what you want to do. And that will determine, you know, how other things play out. Yeah. So I liked it a lot. And we got it, I think it was last Christmas. It's supposed to be for a minimum of 3 players. But I think if you buy the expansions, you can play it solo. And it was supposed to help kind of with 2 players as well. But we never bought the expansions because we just bought the game and we were like, well, we'll figure out. We tried it at 2 regardless. And I think with lower player count, you'll miss out on that player interaction of your ships running into each other out in space somewhere.
Right.
Because we kind of just went and did our own things. So it was great to have a third person around to come and play with us.
Yeah.
And he really liked it and we really liked it. And the rules, well, there's a lot of them. They're very intuitive. So it doesn't feel like you're learning a bunch of stuff. So that makes sense. They all kind of make sense when they fit together. Yeah. So it's really, really easy to pick up. And it's very casual. And I love that you can set the length of the game. You can decide how many turns you're going to play to till somebody wins.
Right.
And it's just fun. I just find it such a relaxing, easy game. And it's beautiful. It comes with painted miniatures. It's got its own set of metal tokens. And it's got this beautiful board where you place out, you know, the new places you're going to. The hexes go out onto the board.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just think Zia is such a delight. And so did our friend. So that was fantastic. So I really enjoyed that. I think it's just such a nice rainy afternoon game. I would pull it out anytime. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that was my adventures with Zia.
Yeah, you've mentioned it before, haven't you? And it's nice to hear that you've now had 3 players playing it and got more out of it. So that's good.
Yeah, it's one of those games that we'd only played once, but we knew instantly that it was a keeper, but it wasn't going to be a game you were pulling out very often. Yeah. It was very much an event game.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that I'm glad we kept it and didn't change your mind. I knew it was good. So it was even better with more people. So it just, you know, it just shines really. So, what was the next game on your list? Because I know you wanted to say the two together, so now I've been very curious to know what the second one was.
well, it's just because they're both light games, and I think what I like about the second one is actually it's a part of a... Well, it's not a collection of games, but let's put it this way. They're all by Button Shy.
Oh, yes.
And Button Shy do wallet games as part... You know, they do other stuff as well, but I think they're known for their wallet games. Yep. And I've heard about wallet games a lot, and as everyone probably knows by now, I like small box games.
Yes, you do.
So I like mint tin games, I like mini mint tin games, and now wallet games, which are even smaller. So you can probably fit like 5 wallet games into your pocket for 1 mint tin game. And what also is interesting about the Button Shy games is that they're usually, I think it's 18 card games, maybe all of them, but the majority of them are. Mm-hmm. And usually they set a contest where, you know, they then do a criteria of what those 18 cards are. I think there was one contest where every card had to be exactly the same. So 18 cards exactly the same and things like that. So just quite interesting ideas to make designers, you know, come up with some clever solutions. And the game that I've tried is Seasons of Rice, which is 2-player only. My wife and I played it last night and we both said, this reminds us of another game, but we couldn't think of it. I still can't think of it. But think about, well, it's basically a sort of a tie-laying game. So you make a little rice paddy out of the cards that you have, and they're sort of aligned sort of diagonally rather than horizontally and vertically, if you like. Mm-hmm. So even though you line up the cards side by side, so either left to right, top to bottom, you can even overlap, not overlap the cards themselves, but slide them up and down slightly, so you can have like half the side touching and things like that. But it's really dictated by the lines on the cards. So they go sort of diagonally across, which make the sort of the paddy field boundaries are diagonally across. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to explain, really, but when you see it, it sort of makes sense. So yeah, 18 cards. They're also double-sided. So one side, as I say, is the paddy fields. The other side is what they call the ancestors, basically a card that gives you some bonus points potentially for scoring. So there's some basic scoring that you get when you close a paddy field, and then your ancestor might give you some bonus points at the end of the game or during the game. And it also works as a point tracker as well. And it's just so clever. It takes like 15 minutes to play. 18 cards, you know, it's sort of like card drafting as well. So you start with a hand of, I think, 7 cards, basically. And then you play a card and the other card goes sort of like into an offer row in the middle. Then you swap hands and you keep going around until you've played all your cards. And then the next season starts and you all draw from the offer row in the middle. And really simple mechanisms in there and quite straightforward to play. The only thing that does your head in is, I say, that the lines are sort of diagonal. So you want to keep turning the cards to make them horizontal and just, you know. But once you get over that, it's such a fun game. And 2 players, you know, in a wallet, 18 cards, rules are really simple. And yet it's some of those games that I would play probably regularly. You know, you could take it with you, have it once we can go out to restaurants and things again, have it in a restaurant somewhere waiting for food on a pub or whatever. Yeah. Or if you go out and about, you know, have it and you can just play it. And it doesn't take up too much room because the cards are relatively small as well. Mm. So yeah, Seasons of Rice by Buttonshy is one of the games. I've got 4 others as well. And trying to work my way through them all. But really excited and really pleased I went for them because it is exactly up my street.
Yes.
Small box game. Can't get much smaller than a wallet.
I'm waiting for you to go to dice games only because you can carry a lot of dice in your pocket. Yeah. I've heard wonderful things about the Buttonshy series of games, particularly Sprawlopolis is one that comes up a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, as the lovely little city builder. So I love seeing what they come up with. And I also love that they give the designers the challenge, like you said, where it's like, invent a game that does exactly this, and then they have the competition to see who'll win. And I like that a lot. I think that's really interesting. And of course, if you like small games with a small footprint, like yourself, like you can't really get much smaller, really, without it. But it's amazing what you can get out of a set number of cards. I always think, though, that like that's a huge design feat to do so much with so little. So yeah, exciting stuff. And plus, you know, easy on the wallet as well. So,
I mean, I think the most expensive part was actually having it shipped over from the US. So,
probably.
I mean, the games were more expensive, but it's sort of, you know, it just felt like I could have probably bought another 2 Buttonshy games for the shipping, but that's life. That's how it goes. But still worth it. You know, so if you buy like 5 games in a go, and sometimes they do like discounts. So I did it when they did like a discount code as well. Cool. So, shipping was basically almost free for me because I've got a discount code. But yeah, it's definitely worth looking at if you like small box games.
Marvelous. That's cool.
So yes, I think we've covered all the things now, really, of the games we played and what we've been up to. So that means we have to move on to our main topic, which is conventions and exhibitions. I think we have to.
It's so sad. I just don't know if I'm emotionally prepared for this topic on this, the second day of Digital Essensspiel, where we're going to talk about conventions and exhibitions. Excellent. So let's roll on over and wipe away my tears.
Yes, let's get the tissue out. See you at the other side.
So today's topic seems like a particularly apt one for this time of year. And of course, we want to talk about conventions and exhibitions. And how could you not be thinking about them right now? So as we're recording, Spiel Digital has begun.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a big thing, I think, for the board gaming world for it not to be in person this year, isn't it? And I suppose we're all waiting with bated breath to see how it goes. What will it mean for future conventions? Like, things are a bit uncertain when it comes to conventions at the minute. Yeah. So we've like a bit of a discussion planned for kind of, we'll talk a little bit about conventions and, you know, what we love about them and all that kind of stuff. So do you get to go to conventions very often, Oliver? Like, we'll call it pre-COVID. would you have gone to lots of conventions? Yeah.
Well,
pre-COVID.
Really, I think my main convention was always UK Games Expo. because it was close enough for me for where I live, you know, at the NEC in Birmingham. Yeah. You know, it didn't take too long to get there by car. So even mm-hmm. attending just for one day was actually doable.
Yeah.
Staying overnight was sort of going to be my next plan, but that never quite happened. So I went to, I think, two UK Games yeah. Expos before this year, basically. So that's going back 2 years mm-hmm. ago. And then the big one was Spiel in Essen last year. So that was, for me, the, mm-hmm. the big event.
Yes.
I was not quite sure whether I would go again. And then, you know, it looked like maybe we should. And I think we all both agreed that we'd probably do that again and meet up and do things and whatever. And yeah, it just didn't turn out obviously that way. And then the last one I attended before
yeah.
it all kicked off was Aircon here in the UK, which is Aircon. A long way away from where I am. And it was a long drive. So I was thinking afterwards, okay, God, it's a wonderful event, definitely. But is it worth the drive? Even if I do stay over, just a very long day then. And now it's not, well, it might be taking place next year. They're hoping that is, if they've found a date and all that. But, you know, if it doesn't, yeah. I don't know. But if it does, I'm now thinking, yeah, I do want to attend now, because obviously you have been sort of, yeah, not been able to see people, you know. And Aircon is one of those events where it's nice. It's a small exhibition, so you actually have time to speak to people and sit with people. And it's much nicer yeah. than something like UK Games mm-hmm. Expo. And obviously Spielmesse is one of those things where you almost have to make appointments to see people. Otherwise, it's just going to be impossible. So yeah, UK Games Expo, I think, is mm-hmm. the one that I always enjoyed attending and have been doing regularly, well, twice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the others were sort of new, and I was hoping to do them. So we'll see what happens. How about you? Are you a regular mm-hmm. event or exhibition attendee? And if so, where do you go?
Do I sound like the kind of person who leaves their house? No. So I suppose the con I would always attend is kind of my local one here, which normally happens in January, and it's connected to the university here in Cork, and it would be WarpCon. And you know, it's very much a small kind of local thing, and we would just ride up with like 3 bags worth of games and sit down at some of the tables and see who we'd run into,
yeah, yeah.
you know, who'd come and play games with us. So it's always a kind of a very relaxed affair. But so God knows, yeah, so I don't know if WarpCon's going to happen this year. That actually was probably the last convention I made it to this year. So yeah. I had plans to go to the UK Games Expo because, well, you know, we were going to do a talk.
We were going to do a podcast, live podcast in front of a live audience yes, and everything. Were. And no, it didn't happen.
I know. It was really funny because I remember you telling me how you'd book yeah. the slot and would I be able to come? And I'm like, I can't leave Oliver on his own. So I was like, right, I'll arrange to get to the UK Games Expo. And then yeah. that didn't happen. Obviously, Spiel is the other one I have been to. And I'm heartbroken about this year because my Spiel has like been a big progression. It's like the first year I went was 2 years ago and I went for one day, like a maniac. Yeah. And I got a kind of a feel for it, but I murdered myself in the yeah. process. So then last year I went back and I brought my husband for, like, you know, backup yeah. and we had a place to stay and everything, and we stayed, you know, a couple of days, and that was even better. But then, you know, you learn so much, I think, every time you
yeah,
go
definitely.
How to do better. And then this year I was really excited actually because we came home and my husband was like, I don't think I'll go next year because
right.
it was kind of yeah, stressful yeah. and yeah. things like that. And then within like a month or so he said, oh, I've booked the accommodation for next year. He just did it all by himself. I was like, you're the best. And he had an amazing hotel. There's a new hotel that just opened up right across from the Mesa, literally okay. across the road. And yeah, so I was so excited yeah. this year. I was like, oh, this is fantastic. I can have a break whenever yeah, yeah. I want. And I was like, I could have the Board Game Inquisition meetup.
Yes, true. You could, yeah.
Come and say hi. I could. I had all these plans. And yeah, so all of that's gone down the drain. So yeah, I'm a little bit sad to be talking about conventions because I don't do a lot of things or go a lot of places. And it's a big deal for me to go and do these things. But they're totally worth it, I think. I think conventions yeah. are wonderful. Yeah. So conventions, yes, none this no. year. Everyone's sad, no. I know. But I gotta wonder, actually, Oliver, why do you go to conventions in the first place? What's the point of a convention for you? Why would you go?
I think there's various things to this, and I think we should distinguish between conventions and exhibitions, even though I think if you attend them,
yeah, true.
You know, you attend them probably for similar reasons, but really, exhibitions are really more about yeah. exhibitors. So companies being there, selling their products, or at least marketing their products, promoting them.
Yeah.
And that's the driver for exhibitions. So Spielmesse mm-hmm. is an exhibition. So it's yeah. it's all about the exhibitors. Quite often they're also business to business. So, you know, publishers may have meetings.
Yeah.
or they meet designers, you know, to try and sign up new designers. So it's more about doing business. Yes, there are visitors, and obviously in Spiel there are loads of visitors, as we've seen ourselves. You know, the aisles are absolutely packed and all that. But the focus is more on the exhibitors and the products, and, you know, doing business, really, I think. Whereas conventions seems to have the sort of opposite approach. So conventions are about people wanting to meet, and there might be seminars or talks and things. There's more of the focus is on the people there. So for board game conventions, something like Aircon, for example, it's about playing games, for example. And yes, there will be exhibitors as well, but they're usually a smaller focus. So, you know, at Aircon, there's like, I don't know how many exhibitors, but there's, a few rows of tables where there'll be, you know, people marketing their games, promoting their games and things like that. And that's very nice. But the focus is all on playing games at Aircon. And it's about the people and, let's say, having little seminars or sessions or, you know, live podcasts and things like that. Mm. And that's the difference. And but as I say, from my perspective, and maybe from yours as well, I think both are worth attending for probably very similar reasons, because I think if you make reviews and you're looking for games and things like that, it's still worth going to these conventions, because there'll be more time to talk to people, because chances are publishers will be there, or people or designers will be there, and you get a chance probably to talk to them more easily. Whereas an exhibition, you might have to make appointments, because they're probably already fully booked, because it's more about the business to business stuff. But from my perspective, I probably go to those for very similar reasons. Okay, UK Games Expo, maybe my schedule is more to actually see certain exhibitors, certain publishers, and talk to them about specific things. Whereas something like Aircon is probably more about, okay, I'm going to see some other board game reviewers and people, other board game press, as we like to say, and play games and things. But I think it's very similar. How about you? Do you approach them differently, or what do you get out of a convention versus exhibition, or generally?
Well, see, I suppose in my mind, I'm putting them all together as a convention simply because it's a group of people coming together in a particular hobby, you know, and some of them are definitely more business orientated than others. But I think you still get kind of, a lot of those same things still happen. Though, for me, I think the point of a convention, instantly my heart went, oh, it's the games, of course. I want to go and hear about the new releases. I want to see what's coming out. I want to see what I could pick up and bring home. But that's not entirely true, because a lot of it is about getting to meet people too. And to meet people you wouldn't normally get a chance to meet in person. Mm. I think that's a big deal for me, because I found it amazing going to Spiel last year and getting to meet people I'd only ever interacted with on Twitter. I thought that was amazing. And everyone was just so warm, and it all felt like we knew each other, which was even weirder. But it's fantastic. And I think those kind of experiences are the only ones you're going to get at conventions. You know, that kind of way, there's a great camaraderie, I think. When you're surrounded by people who all love the same thing you do. So it's the first time, I think in a very long time, I bumped into somebody on a train when we were at Spiel, and we were just talking about board games, you know, because everyone's there for the same purpose. Yeah. So it's like, I don't know, it's like a world filled with all of your favorite people. And that's why it makes it very hard to go home and back to the real world, where not everybody is as cool as you. So that's why I think that's what's special about conventions for me, is that just being immersed in something you love and everybody else loves as well. Mm. I think that's just so special. So that's the point of it in my mind anyway.
No, absolutely. From attendings' point of view, it's about that. It's having the fun. And I was just doing making a distinction, because as I do, some conventions, exhibitions feel slightly different because of the different sort of purpose, if you like. Yeah. But yeah, when you attend them, it is about meeting people. And I think it's quite clear from the way we're talking that we do both enjoy conventions, even though they're probably quite overwhelming, seeing so many people in such a short time and doing so many things. But it is just revitalizing, as you say, just talking to someone,
isn't it?
A complete stranger, and say, oh, you're playing this game, that's very interesting. It could be something really basic, because we all know we're there for almost the same purpose, because we all love board games.
Exactly.
And if you don't mind, I'd like to mention that one of my favorite moments off the conventions, and that happened at Essen Spiel last year. You know, if you're allowed to reminisce for a little bit, maybe. And that was
maybe a little bit.
That was when I arrived on the sort of day of setup in the hotel after we set up the stand. I was working on the Fogolov stand that last year, which was really good. And got to the hotel quite late and was sitting in the lobby, and there was a group of well, Germans in this case, but a group of people, and they got Skull King out and started playing. And the reason why I then joined them was mostly because they sort of didn't have anywhere to sit, and I was sitting by myself, you know, with like four other chairs free, and I said, oh, do you mind if you sit here? And I said, yeah, sure. And so I started playing, and I sort of watched them and said, oh, what's this game? And they explained and said, well, do you want to join me? Do you want to join us? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And we started playing Skull King, which I'd not played before until then. And yeah, it's just that moment of complete strangers inviting you to play a game. And then we started talking what they were up to. And, you know, are you attending Essen? Yeah, of course we are. You know, that's why we're here. And you know, just some random people who play Skull King in a hotel lobby. And yeah, it's just that feeling, I think, is absolutely amazing. And that's probably really the favorite moment that explains why attending those events is such an amazing thing. Yeah. So do you have a favorite moment of the exhibitions or events that you've been attending recently?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, recently. Within the last year, I suppose. No, I think I'm... no, but isn't... I know it's going to sound a little weird, maybe a little self-centered, but it really surprised me because I had two people recognize me from my videos.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Who I didn't know of at all. And that was a really big surprise for people to stop and go, oh, you're Board Game Inquisition.
Wow.
And I don't mean it to sound... It sounds as strange as it does, but it was just more... It made you realize that you're out there in the community somewhere in a way you don't realize when you're at home.
Yeah.
Because you're at home and you're putting stuff out on the internet and you're writing things, or you're making videos, and it's all just you shoving stuff out there. It's amazing to think someone received it and recognized it and just, you know, came over to say hello. And what was really ironic was they came over and was like, I hope you're feeling a bit better. And it's just like, yeah, I know, you know, because I was just so stressed all the time. Like, I'm part board game reviewer, part depressive. And it's just funny that people kind of hung on to that or noticed me. It was really nice. I walked up to the Emperor S4 booth, and the guy behind the counter just waved his hand. He went, oh, Board Game Inquisition.
Hey,
I
was like, amazing.
My God, I love you guys. I was just like, it was just the weirdest thing. And it did a lot for me mentally when I came home afterwards, because I suddenly felt part of something.
Yeah.
That it wasn't just, you know, me doing these things, that there are other people out there, you know, doing some. I don't know what it is. It's just, yeah, I think you know it, though. You know that feeling when you come back and you're like, I have so many ideas, I have so many things I want to do. I thought it would take a lot out of me, but really it gave me a lot.
Good.
So, yeah, excited, like lovely, like really lovely things. Yeah. And of course, I got to meet you.
Yes.
Can't forget that bit.
I do apologize.
It's really
for that.
Funny because. for those of you who don't know, I was literally walking along looking for Oliver, and we bumped right into each other. And the first thing I did was like, Oliver! And I gave you a massive hug.
Big
I was
hug,
like,
yes.
Finally. it was so funny. But yeah, it was just lovely. I find it hilarious that even though we'd never met, it really felt like we already knew each other.
Yes.
You know, the game we were, I thought we might be awkward and it would be like, what do we say when we don't have games to talk about, you know? But it was great.
Yeah.
And it's just, so yeah, there's a lot. I have great memories. And this is why you keep going to conventions, despite them being kind of expensive, difficult to get to sometimes, and arduous.
Yes.
But totally worth it.
But then, I mean, that was that was an amazing moment, of course, you know. Mm. And, you know, for people who don't know, we do record this remotely all the time. Whenever we first started with this, we never met in person. We've been recording, I don't know, it was like 10 episodes like that until we actually first met in person at Essen. So people think, you know, oh, these people probably know each other from way back when or whatever. And no, we've basically never worked together. We've just seen each other, watched each other on Twitter, heard what people were doing, and just start this. Yeah. And then you meet suddenly in person and you go, oh, it's you. You do look like in your videos. And no, I don't look like a board game table. I look like an actual person. And it was amazing.
It was fun, isn't it? It was just fun stuff.
But obviously there's a fun bit of going to conventions, but I guess there is also, I don't know, a professional way of approaching it for us board game press of reviews and things like that. And I mean, you're probably the same, but when I was talking about you going to UK Games Expo, the very first one I went to, I hadn't actually started writing a blog or anything. I was actually going around for a different reason and probably more enjoying it. Whereas the second UK Games Expo, I thought, well, actually, I've now started my blog. let's see whether I can talk to some publishers and see how we go, and sort of actually making a plan of who I wanted to see and who I wanted to speak to and things like that. And I think that is obviously the other side of it, that we do tend to go there with a rough idea, at least, of who we want to see and what we want to, you know, what games maybe we want to look at, whether we want to have demos or something, whether we want to speak to certain people. Yeah. And of course, the longer you are in this sort of, I was going to say industry, but in this hobby, let's call it, you get to know more people. And as we said before, even though you probably only know them via Twitter, they're actually very friendly in person as well. So you then end up going to a stand and say, oh, can I speak to so-and-so and things like that. And there is that. So there's a sort of work side of it. And I think that is also very important. So even though it's nice to obviously stay in touch with people via Twitter or watch their live streams and hop on those and, you know, chat and things like that, actually meeting face to face and playing a demo live with someone physically obviously is a such a different experience. So conventions are important in that. And I think we'll come to online conventions a bit later, but I think that's the other side of it, not just the fun and being immersed in all the geekery and nerdery that we all do, but also the sort of work side of it. And I guess for you, it's probably the same. I think when you went to Essen, you had quite a long list of who you wanted to see when and all that sort of stuff.
Meetings.
Yes, meetings, that's right.
I had a lot of meetings, which is surprising. And this isn't something, you know, I signed up for myself. It was just people who wanted to come and see me in person and maybe show me what they were doing. And so a lot of my schedule last year was going from meeting to meeting on different days. And then also, of course, the schedule of just meeting people, you know, from the internet, of trying to find them at particular times or at particular stands, or, you know, when people were free and things like that. So, but I think that's also so important as a reviewer, to be seen and to get people to know you. It isn't enough just to make great reviews. You also need to make friends. And you can kind of understand it from a publisher's point of view, where they don't know you from Adam. It makes a difference if they get to sit down and talk with you and see how enthusiastic you are about their games. And, you know, you can discuss what you know, how you might like to review it or how you'd like to show it off or things like that. And you build those connections. And it's something I think that's really important, but it also makes it very difficult for people who aren't as socially adept as each other. I think you could make amazing reviews, but I don't think you'll get particularly far if you don't make a bunch of friends. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds kind of harsh and strange, but I understand why it is that way. You know, if you have, you know, 10 review copies, are you going to give some to the people you know and whose work you know and who you've met before, or chance it on a complete unknown? So it does make sense. There's part of it that is businessy like that.
Yeah.
I suppose if you want to call, you know, making reviews and things like that and making content a business, which we clearly don't. But, you know, you got to just get to know people and, you know, let them kind of decide about you and show you, and also show yourself what you're about.
Yeah.
Too. And I think people will remember you.
Absolutely.
And things like that. So
I think so. And it's that face to face, and generally I think showing that sort of dedication to the product, and as you said, the enthusiasm. You can obviously I think a lot of people can do that or receive that better face to face. Yes, on Twitter is great. Yes. You know, on like live streams, chatting is great. But if you actually see someone face to face, you know, you can show your enthusiasm probably better, and they can probably read you better. And I think it's just clearer of what you're up to, because I think a lot of people can just write a lovely positive tweet and not actually mean it. But if you do it face to face, it's a bit different. Yeah. And I think that's moving on to online conventions now, virtual conventions. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the problems that we have with this. So as everyone knows, these events don't take place physically anymore because of the situation we're in.
I like you call it the situation.
Well, yeah.
Because it's the situation, you see, because in Ireland during like World War II, they called it the emergency. Didn't call it World War II. So I love this. You have the situation. I was like, the emergency. Yeah, it all fits in there. It's like, no, something life changing and world altering is going on. So I'm sorry I interrupted you, but you made me giggle.
No, that's all right. But yeah, so I think some virtual conventions have done it better than others. And, you know, we're all watching Spiel Digital very keenly at the moment. And I think some of us will have seen that the website went down on the first day. There are technical issues. I think, you know, that it is what it is. I don't think anyone, well, I think we were all hoping that it was going to be live throughout, but I think there was always this element of it would go down just because of the volume. And these things happen. And obviously other virtual events have their technical issues. And we all have to get used to new technology, using Discord and Twitch and whatever else. Being able to play on Tabletop Simulator and Tabletopia and all those sort of things. So there's lots of new things we have to learn, new things, new skills. And I think that's one of the big barriers with virtual events as well. But let me go back to what we're saying about face-to-face. I think as a reviewer, it probably is important that we do show our faces at these virtual conventions as well. At least we can say, yeah, we attended.
Interesting.
I personally found it very hard, though, because I'm not physically there. So to me, it was, okay, during the week, I'm you know, working from home, so I can have maybe a video running somewhere or listen to like a... you know, the audio of a live stream, and I can sort of be there but not be there. But at the weekend, it's then family time. It's not work time. Whereas if I'd been physically at Essen Spiel, you know, we would have booked that in advance and I would have booked the time off. And, you know, my wife and daughter was known, okay, I'm a daddy's now in Essen and, you know, I'm there and I can focus on that. And that's it. Whereas when I'm at home, it's, I at least found it difficult to go, right, no, sorry, I'm not going to do family time now. I'm at Spiel Essen and I'm going to do this here online instead. And to me, that was one of the big things. But yet, I do think being able to support publishers virtually is important. And I think that's why I started hopping onto things like the live streams from Hub Games and things like that, because it's nice to have that relationship virtually. But that's obviously different to at an online convention. I mean, I don't know how you feel about attending these digital events. Have you been to any of them? Have you listened to the live streams or anything?
I tried to keep up with Spiel Digital. I managed to get in earlier, I think, than most people did yesterday. But my problem is that these seem to be geared towards, you already know what game you want to look at. So here's all the stuff related to this game. Here's the live stream. Here's the teach. Here's where you can play it on Tabletopia or whatever it is. My problem is I just wanted to go and browse and look at stuff and see what was out there. And it's practically impossible. Because I haven't tried for any of the other online conventions, but I said I would give it a proper try for Spiel. And while it is nicely laid out and they have things kind of organized, I just found it very hard to feel like I could just get a taste of what was going on without being fully invested or knowing exactly what it was I wanted to do. You know, because you can go to the Spiel and know exactly where you're going for whatever time if you want, but you can also just walk through the hallways and go, ooh, look at that, I'll stop and look at that, that looks interesting. I needed a way to browse what was there for me to kind of feel any way involved or connected with it.
Absolutely.
And I understand why it is digital, because, you know, if there wasn't a Spiel at all this year, a lot of people, I think, would be out a lot of money and things like that. You know what I mean? They had to come up with another way to arrange this, because it's bad for publishers and it's bad for designers and things like that if you don't have this kind of meetup. I'm using inverted commas for meetup. And so I think something had to be made of it. And I see a lot of people are putting a lot of effort and a lot of time and stuff into creating videos and content and all sorts of stuff. But if you can't find it or you can't access it easily, like I only know about the Spiel streams from people I already follow or who I already know that they're putting on their stream today. I couldn't tell you what else was on. I was trying to find things yesterday. And so I personally feel a little bit overwhelmed. And this is the part where I'm going to start sounding like an old person really fast. But I feel the same way with Discord as well. I find it very overwhelming. I find it very hard to keep track of the conversations. And then I feel weird when something someone has said has passed by, because more people have said things and you want to try and reply to that. I just, I don't feel it like it flows like a story. So I find it very hard to Discord. This is the point where I tell you, we have a Discord server. You should totally come and talk to us.
Do by text, so not by like voice.
Just send your letter by pigeon to my house. And I sound like I'm a terrible technophobe, but I'm not really. When it comes to playing games online, I'm just not as big a fan. See, it gets back to this face-to-face thing for me. And this is a bit of a not quite a touchy subject, but it's something I feel like I know a bit about, because I was writing my PhD on the importance of face-to-face and how important interacting with each other's faces and things is, as opposed to digitally. And so there's something, and especially with board games, because they're so tactile, and there's so much about your board game is about reading the other players at a table and deciding what to do based on maybe how everyone else is behaving. Like, so much of that is just entirely innate and picked up. Now, we can't play games the way we normally do. Is this a terrible alternative? Absolutely not. It's probably a great idea. I find it lacking, but other people are doing great with it, which is fantastic. And I think as reviewers right now as well, it's hard to keep up with everything because everything's coming out for these new platforms. And so you kind of need to be already versed in that and willing to play games that way too. If you want to see new games or you want to make connections with publishers, like you said, you suddenly need to be able to be on all of these platforms as well as what you are already doing.
Yeah.
And I think it's a big jump. That's just me. Other people maybe are transitioning much better than I am. But I just don't know about it.
I think you're right.
Conventions online, I don't know.
It is one of those things, as I said, there is this technological barrier that is definitely there. And yes, I mean, I've started streaming live, doing playthroughs and things on Twitch, and it's something you learn and you get through. But obviously, it is no replacement for in-person games. It never will be. Mm. And yes, even though our games group's now moved online and it's the closest I can get to playing with my friends, and it you still get some of that feeling, of course, because you still have the banter between friends and things, and you're playing a game that you know. Mm-hmm. But it is a different experience for sure. And I think your point about being able to walk through the halls, along the aisles, and just stumbling across something that you wouldn't have otherwise is such a key thing that will never be replaced. Mm-hmm. You know, especially at an event like Essen, which is so huge, you will find a tiny publisher that you've never heard about. And you still don't hear about.
Yes.
And you look at this and go, mm-hmm. wow, that game looks really amazing. And you walk up to them and they're so happy. Mm-hmm. And you play it and you buy it and off you go. And you can buy it there and then no shipping as well. Obviously, that's the other big thing, except obviously for you, you had to ship all your stuff back to you. But you know what I mean? You
sort of
pick it up there and
every penny.
Yeah. But it is so different. And also, I was thinking about Spiele specifically. There's so many exhibitors out there which sell like accessories, whether it's miniatures or terrain or, I don't know, game mats and things like that. That, you could buy online and you can look at it and go, yeah, that's probably what I want. But especially with those sort of things, you do want to have them in your hand. You want to feel the dice. You want to see the miniature, see how detailed it actually is.
True.
You want to feel the game, you know, the player, the game mats and see what they're like, the quality and stuff. And I think they're probably one of the sets of companies that will have been bypassed in Spiel specifically. I think publishers probably can promote themselves, and certainly the well-known publishers, they're probably fine. Mm-hmm. For them, Spiel is just another way of promoting their games, and they can probably carry on releasing stuff at Spiel Digital just as they would at the real Spiel. For the smaller publishers, a lot harder, as you say, unless you know who you're looking for. It's so hard. I mean, I'm not going to browse through, I don't know, how many hundreds of games there are. I could browse through on the website.
I tried.
Yeah. And yes, you can filter it by number of players and type of games. And I was actually listening to a German podcast, and this is a little shout out to Bretta Gurge, where he was talking to the one of the developers of the platform, and obviously the challenges that they were facing, and they're still learning things, and they did improve it more and more, and were taking on board, I think, feedback from exhibitors mainly, and I think that's potentially where some of this goes wrong as well. I think they need more visitor input. So this platform will evolve over time. Of course, it will get better.
Mm-hmm.
But at the moment, you look at it and go, I mean, there might be gems in here that I'll never know about, and that the smaller publishers will never be able to sell, and they'll be out of pocket. And I say there's even the accessories listed on the website, but I don't know whether I'd pick up a little miniature, you know, by buying it online. I probably would have done that anyway. I would have gone to a miniature website and bought it. Whereas at Essen, you walk around and you go, oh, this is really cool. And you might take a souvenir, you know, might have never bought a miniature in your life, but you look at this and go, oh, this is really cool.
Exactly.
I'll buy it. So there's so much to say about this in-person stuff. And at the same time, though, I think if you now look into the future, so let's assume one day, which we all hope, all this will be over and we'll all meet in person again and we'll have real conventions again. I do think these online versions will remain, though, because one big benefit is, and there is a benefit for people who would otherwise have to travel long distance, including yourself, including people from America coming over to Europe and whatever, they can still attend remotely. And that is amazing. Yeah. I think that is great. Yet at the same time, I don't know whether that needs a big convention to do it. And I think that leads to another point I was trying to make here is actually the same sort of events could be run by the publishers themselves. You know, having an open day, and a lot of publishers do open days where you can, have you know, they invite the press day, have a press day, invite them around.
Yeah.
They can do it online, and they have done it online. And I think that works really well. They promote it, and you go there and you know, okay, I'm going to, today or in the next couple of hours, I'm going to hear about all the new games and I can book in demos and things. Yeah. And I think that, to me, works better online than this big exhibition-like spiel. I mean, how about you? Have you attended any of these sort of publisher events?
No, I've seen a couple of them happening. I know Capstone Games had like their own kind of weekend and within the last month or two where it was them just kind of showing off their own kind of things and they had their own kind of content and stuff for their games. I think that's not a bad idea. I definitely think it's probably easier to navigate.
Yes.
So, you know, you go to this particular publisher, so you know you like their stuff, you want to see what their next things are going to be. But I do want to get back to something you said actually about how these digital conventions are great in the sense that people from all around the world can attend them. I also think this is great for anybody with a disability or who is unable to travel, or also it's so much cheaper. Think of the think of the money you might have saved on accommodation and all that kind of stuff, and then getting the experience at home. I think it breaks down the barrier of people who couldn't afford to go to the convention versus those who could. So I think you're going to include a different subset of gamers who maybe are less hardcore and going to Spiel every year, and you might get more casual players in having a look around and seeing what's, you know, available. So there definitely are advantages.
And not just that, I think also you have people who just don't like this big mass of people coming towards them. So there is that who people really don't want that social interaction. They finally can attend Spiel digitally. Yes, it is a different experience, but you know, it, as you say, it does open up to a huge number of people who are dedicated gamers, possibly, but just don't like that part of it, and they just want to do it remotely, you know, do it from home, log in, watch a stream and things like that.
Exactly. The other, I suppose the other thing is that when you have Spiel Digital the way it is right now, it does very much feel like a ginormous shop where you look at a particular game, there's like, here's the stream to do with this game to help you buy it, you know, here's so what someone else has said about it so you can see it so you can buy it. It just feels a little bit more in your face than it might have done so in person, because you know in person there'll be people with things set up at all the stands and they'll talk to you about the game maybe, or you can have a look at it, and it's less, it's more interactive, less passive, because no matter how hard you try to make video content showing off a game, it's not the same as somebody answering your questions directly about it. You know, that kind of way. I think this is so, we're broadcasting sales stuff at you. It feels that way anyway to me. Unless we're kind of more community orientated. Now, I don't know if that's even achievable, to be very honest, but it, especially, I suppose, someone like me who would go to Spiel to look at the games and things like that, I find how kind of the games are, like, you can buy some of the releases from Spiel right now, but they all come from the publisher's website. So if you order them, they're coming from different parts of the world. And then there's all of the shipping and things like that. So it doesn't feel like a united kind of convention. This feels like a spot on the internet for people to show off their wares so that you will come and buy them. And yeah, I guess that is the purpose, though, of Spiel at the end of the day. But I think without, I think when you take away the people and the personal touches of each other, I think you're left with that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It has not left me feeling warm and fuzzy inside. Now, maybe it can improve. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. It's possible. But I would really have liked to have got something out of this.
I feel like you, and I guess definitely will improve. As I say, whatever happens, I do think these digital bits will remain, or they should remain at least. I think Spiel would miss a trick if it would happen again in person next year, if they didn't also have a digital version up and running as well, and somehow stream demos and things like that. Even if it just streamed like a demo tape with an overhead camera or something, you know, if there was that way of being there. And as we're saying about demos, actually, I think I haven't noticed myself, but someone was complaining that it is very hard to actually find a demo to take part in. So you go find your game, find the demos available, you click on it, and then it just tells you it's full. Whereas at a real expo, you would probably walk around, see, oh, there's three people playing, or have just started, so you might go, look, is there room for a fourth one? They might say, yeah, actually there is. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, online, yeah. it's so hard. We might just watch them anyway, just, you know, sit there and watch and wait for the next one to start. You talk to someone and say, oh, by the way, when is the next available slot? So this, as you say, this person's touch is missing online. There needs to be more of that. And
yeah.
it is so much harder because, you know, at a real expo, you have obviously booth staff being on site and can answer questions. Yeah. Even if someone's doing a demo, they might quick look over their shoulder and say, oh, sorry, can I help you? And answer a quick question.
Yeah.
In a digital demo, they can't yes. go, oh, sorry, someone's hovering. Can I help them? It doesn't work like that. So they have to yeah. have another person Not maybe like to watch who's in the lobby mm-hmm. and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So,
yeah.
Yeah, but I do yeah. think digital versions should stay. I think that that's worth building on these platforms and offering the a possibility for others, as I say, opened up to more people yeah. To attend in a virtual way and things like that. So yeah,
well, it might have been really nice if they had like a way of going around the stalls as a little video from each player yeah. Publisher or whatever, whoever was exhibition. Well, so it'd be like nearly walking around the stands as you go from one to the other kind of thing. Like if that's in there somewhere, I'd love to know. I feel like I missed a trick.
Well, apparently CGE did you know? Like a virtual walk around, and I don't know how it worked, but it's sort of, I imagined like something like Minecraft okay. where you can literally go around and there's representations of the different exhibitors. I only saw screenshots, yeah. but it did look like you like a virtual character, and you move around and you can, you know, see who's there and you can
cool.
walk into events and things yeah. like that. And I think yeah, that would be better. Mm. Don't know whether it would
if only
work
I could find such a thing.
Yeah.
If only I could find it. Yeah. So there you yeah. go. But yeah, maybe people can manage it better than me.
Yeah. So yeah, so I think we've all agreed that conventions, real life conventions, we miss them terribly. We want them back.
Oh yeah, of course.
And that the virtual ones don't quite work yet and probably mm-hmm. never will fill that yeah. sort of need for the face-to-face and the in-person
yeah.
social, not necessarily mm-hmm. social, but just the in-person part. And that's what's yeah. lacking, I think, of the digital ones.
I think so. Do you think, would the year have been any different if there hadn't have been digital conventions at all? Would we have felt like we would have lost out entirely if we just cancelled everything and just waited out till the next could actually happen, the next convention could go ahead?
Well, I think yes. And I don't think necessarily if there were, you know, if these Spiegel Digital would have been cancelled and what would have happened, I wouldn't have minded so much as such. But what was, as I say, important before is those publishers jumping on and doing their own virtual conventions. Yeah. And I think they filled some of that gap. And I think those are important things. I'm glad that's what happened, that actually publishers went out and went, okay, actually, we can promote our stuff. Yeah. We're going to jump on Twitch and learn how that yep. works. And we're going to promote it on Twitter and Facebook and wherever else. And people then start yeah. to join. It's still in its early days. I mean, even some of the big publishers probably don't have hundreds of people watching their live streams, but at least there's mm-hmm. something there. I mean, what a convention obviously creates is a date in your calendar, whereas a publisher yes. convention can do that, but is probably less of a draw. Whereas to Spiel Digital, you know, more people will just attend because there'll be several publishers they want to see. So there is an option to potentially stumble across something, even though, as we said, it's probably yeah. unlikely that you stumble across something you didn't want to see in the first place. But yeah, other than that, I don't think a digital convention as such, as it stands at the moment, really fills that gap. I do hope that more publishers do yeah. their own things and promote that, and then I can yes. actually focus on the half dozen games that they want to release or however many they're thinking about,
know,
you
right?
know, rather than go there and do a list of mm-hmm. 50 games and never get to see any of the demos because yeah. you're at the wrong time and yeah. all that. So it's just, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough one, but we miss conventions. We love you.
We
come
do.
Back soon.
Yes.
We won't be angry. It'll be fine. We just want you safe and home.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's great that people are trying and keeping everything in the community alive, regardless of yeah. how well or how not well it has worked out. We've all been looking forward to this for a while, and it's a means of some people anyway to kind of interact with each other when they can find each other.
Yeah.
And companies feel like they're doing something. And also, there's always the hype as well for the Spiel releases and stuff like that, and that's yeah. all still coming through, albeit a little bit fettered, but yeah, it's there. It's there somewhere, isn't it? Yeah, the idea of it all.
So, I think yeah. so.
Now I can put my tissues back in the box.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that rounds out the topic quite nicely there. And I think really what we want to know is from you, have you been missing any conventions? Have you been attending digital ones?
Yeah.
What is it you liked about them? Was there a really good one that, that you thought did it really well? Are there elements of Spiel Digital that work really well? Or what are your negative experiences? Mm-hmm. And obviously what we'd also want to hear, what are your favorite moments from the real life conventions that you have been to in the past? Let's reminisce a bit and go. And send us your photos, send us your stories. And we have the option to do it online as well. anchor.fm/tabletopinquisition, I believe it is. There's a link, but you have to sign up. So a few steps, but it's free and you don't get lots of spam and things. And you can leave us a voicemail. Yeah, it's quite straightforward. Yeah. And you just leave a voicemail.
It's straightforward. I signed up. Yeah.
There you go. And then we can play it maybe in the next episode or something, or share it with everyone. Mm. And if you have questions or topic suggestions, go there as well. And obviously all the links to our various contact mechanisms, our Discord and everything, Twitter, is all on the website at tabletopinquisition.com. So go there.
Yes.
And yeah, I think...
check us out.
Yeah, definitely. But that's really it, isn't it, I think?
That's it. That's where we end it today, guys. Thanks so much for listening, as always. And we look forward to like another episode of the Tabletop Inquisition podcast, hopefully coming soon.
Yeah, you'll never know when it turns up, hey? Sorry, I had to make
that
joke.
I know you did. It's so good, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Excellent. All right, everybody. Till next time, then. Take care. Bye-bye. Stay safe.
Bye. See you later.